Okay, I'm going to jump ahead just for a moment. Imagine it's Christmas morning, and imagine that you and your loved ones have gathered around the tree in all its beauty and with all the packages, you know, neatly wrapped, or if I wrap them, maybe not so neat. Nevertheless, they're all there, and everybody's kind of settling down. They're getting ready to begin opening their packages. I'm sure somebody is in charge of making sure that they're distributed to the right person. Y'all do that too? You got somebody who makes sure that gets to the right person? Sometimes the right cat. Just saying. And one of the packages are handed to a child, a grandchild, doesn't really matter, but just think about a young one receiving a package, and they look up to you and they ask, "That's nice. What do I have to do?" And you, of course, you're a bit confused by this question, right? And you may even ask, "What do you mean?" And they say, "What do I have to do to earn this gift?" And then you realize something is wrong. The child, for whatever reason, doesn't understand the meaning of gift. They're missing the point, not only of Christmas, but the basic meaning of what is a gift. Now, that would be a kind of a stunning realization on a Christmas morning. It might want to cause you to stop everything and make sure that there's a basic understanding of grace as unmerited favor of God. Well, Jesus, in this passage that Joyce read for us this morning, he's speaking to the Pharisees, and he's telling them, "Guys, you've missed the point. You're missing the point." And maybe we need to ask ourselves, when it comes to the Sabbath, am I missing the point? We can go back to Sabbath's origin, and it finds its origins deep in the past, and it is full of meaning and help for us. We can go clear back to when God created the heavens and the earth. And then we can read in Genesis, "By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested. He rested from all his work. And he blessed the seventh day and made it holy. Because on it he rested from the work of creating, he had done." Don't skip over a few of the key terms here. The first two I mentioned is blessed. He blessed the day. To bless is to anoint for a particular purpose, and it's a purpose that brings fulfillment. In fact, that's one reason why in the Beatitudes, when Jesus says, "Happy are those," and there's eight of them, or nine of them, he says, "Happy are those, blessed are those, happy are those." There, it's the same meaning. It means that you find fulfillment in living out God's purpose. And then he says, the scripture tells us that he set apart and made it holy. That is, set apart. It's to be set apart from the mundane, set apart from the profane, from the worldly, the secular, so that one can center one's attention and self upon God and the things of God. Well, that's pretty good. That in itself is a wonderful gift, but it goes even further, especially for these Pharisees and the Hebrew people. Because you have to ask yourself, well, they're into this, they're emphasizing the Sabbath and that day and what you can and can't do. My friends, they had come up with 39 things that you should not do on that day. Don't move a chair. Because if you drag it across the floor, you might make a furrow in the ground, and then you're working because you're farming. And then I think it was OCD, decided that they were going to find 39 things on each one of the 39 things. Oh. You think maybe they were missing the point. Maybe. So by this time, you think, okay, maybe I can see why it had become a regulation, a ritual that must be done. Where did that start? What origin does that come from? Well, we kind of know, don't we? We don't have to go far. We don't have to think too hard. It's got to go back to the Ten Commandments, right? Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. In the context of God giving this decree, at the time he gave this decree, it was an exceptional gift. Because God was not creating some ritual that must be done that would give God his due. He was giving them a gift that was beautiful, a gift that was wonderful, a gift that literally keeps on giving. What had they been doing for 400 years? They had been slaves in Egypt, working 7 days a week, dawn to dusk. And you remember the story, right, of Moses and Pharaoh, how Pharaoh decided he was going to make it even harder for them, so they have to do double work, you know, to go find the straw in order to make their bricks and all that. All they had known for 400 years was bone-crushing, demoralizing labor. It had no meaning for them other than somehow it sustained them in that moment and kept them from being killed. Now, you and I know, I hope you know, that work can drain you. It can drain you physically, but it also can deplete you mentally. It can inhibit your spiritual relationship with God. And so it can deplete you in many ways. I learned a long time ago. I won't say that I've always abided by the learning. I learned a long time ago that work is a whole lot like a garage. Where I'm going with this is, you know how a garage, somehow or another, with extra space, we will always fill it to capacity, don't we? Doesn't matter if it's a garage, a shed, whatever it is. So that what do you wind up doing? Well, you either go out and rent a space somewhere, or you think, well, I'm going to have some equity in this. I'll build me another shed or buy one, have it set on my property. And then you fill that one up. And then you have the garage sale. Maybe. Does the car ever make it inside? I don't know. We haven't found out yet at our place. It's all right. Now, where am I going with saying that work is like a garage? Well, I have learned a long time ago that work will often expand to the point that it will use up all the time that's available to be completed. If you put down a definite time, okay, I got to have this done by Thursday afternoon, you might well can get it done by Thursday afternoon. But if it's not real, you know, if you fudge on that, so maybe Saturday, it has a way of expanding. And so work can get longer and longer. People today wish for more hours in the day, don't you? You hear that? Or they'll wish for more days in a week in order to get the things done they think they need to get done. I think maybe they should wish for fewer hours and days to work. We think that we're gonna by working harder and longer, we're gonna get more things done. I learned something when I became the director of three large departments that required physical labor at the hospital. When I was director of housekeeping, laundry, and waste management. Something I learned was that when it comes to efficiencies, an 8-hour day, do you know what you actually can expect out of an employee, the standard employee on an 8-hour day? 5.7 hours on average. 5.7 hours. Do you know what you can expect out of a 10-hour day? If you're lucky, 6. A 12-hour day, you don't gain anything. Because as you do that over time, you lose efficiencies. You lose physical capacity, mental alertness. Jesus' comment about the ox in the ditch, you remember that one? When it comes to the Sabbath? You know, and there's this question, and so I think sometimes that his comment about the ox in the ditch is misused by many to the point that some are guilty that they push the ox in the ditch so that they can work. He gave the people this wonderful gift. On this seventh day, on the Sabbath, what is Sabbath? Which word comes from, what does that mean? Rest. Rest. It is written in the imperative, folk. It's not a suggestion. Rest. So how does the Sabbath function as God's gift to the Pharisees, disciples, and to us? What does it do? How does the Sabbath bring us life? Well, I think the first is, that's obvious, is the gift of restoration. It does supply that physical rest, which can restore the body. You know, you watch football games, and man, these athletes today, they are so much more, they're much stronger, bulked up than they were in my day. And to get there, the trainers will tell them that in performing their physical training that they have to make it a point to also have time where they are not training, that they rest so that their muscles can rest and heal. from the training. So it is restoration. It literally restores strength. Secondly, the Sabbath functions as a gift that brings spiritual renewal. Well, that's not a surprise, right? I mean, we expected that God would do that for us. It is meant to be a time in which we seek fellowship with God and not become a ritual that can be kind of just checked off the to-do list. Oh, I did that. No. The Sabbath is to be a time where we stop. Through Sabbath, our spirits are refreshed and our relationship with God is enlivened. The closeness that we have with Him enriches our souls and our lives. It brings great meaning and joy to our existence. The third function that I think we can find in the Sabbath is that unending days of work bring a cost to our mental wellness. Sometimes when we overwork our minds, it's kind of like overworking a pencil. You just get dull. But you still got the lead. God knows that we need times to reflect. Time to consider what the ancients called the true, the good, and the beautiful. Some of my best Sabbaths have been to travel just a short distance and to see the changing of the colors, to see the snow, to see wildlife, to read. To sit and ruminate, chew on things. Isn't that what we see God doing on there in Genesis? It says right there that the close of that sixth day and going to the seventh, that God considered it all. That is, He was reflecting on it all. And what did He say? It is good. And so sometimes I think that one of the places, blessed places in our lives, you ready for this? It's the shower. You're standing there, hopefully under some nice warm to hot water, and you're in, your body's feeling the tension literally wash away, and your mind is completely out of gear when suddenly it seems out of nowhere comes this brilliant idea. You know, it's the point of the Sabbath that Jesus reminds the people here in this passage, the Pharisees, his disciples, and all those who were within hearing, is that Sabbath is a gift of God for our whole being. It's not a regulation. It's a gift of grace, a gift of where we don't have to earn anything like that little kid I was talking about in the illustration. And I think the enemy knew what he was doing long ago, back in the 50s, when we found movie theaters began to open up on Sunday afternoons. Because it was a way of the enemy declaring war on our souls. I'm going to distract you from fellowship with God. from rest. Now, rest does not mean inactivity. I better be quick to say that. Rest is just ceasing your normal activity, your work. So there's restoration, there's renewal, and there's reflection. Three gracious gifts that come to us through the Sabbath and when we're living into it. So today, as we come together here, we are here at this table receiving another gift, the gift of Holy Communion. And Jesus said to us, do this in remembrance of me. It's not just another demand. It's a gift that as we recall our fellowship with him and also with other believers, we are encouraged and we're strengthened. The reminder to go to remember him is not just to look back, but it is for us an acknowledgement that he is with us here and now, in not just in these elements, but present with us by his Spirit. And when we eat and drink this meal, we are participating in that fellowship which is beyond time and space, as I mentioned earlier. And that's the reason I have those candles sitting on that table. A reminder to us all that we enjoy this meal with all those who've gone before and all those who are yet to go. So through this Sabbath and through this meal, we have a way to love Jesus more dearly, to follow him more nearly, and serve him more faithfully. That was the point of the Sabbath.